Thank you very much, and thanks to Bob and Christy for inviting me to present at the National Octane Conference. Ethanol has a bit of a bad rap with the autos, so it might need to remarket itself. But anyway, I'm just going to talk about how this fuel can be used to improve engine performance. Just a little bit of PR, I've got to do this, but Ricciardo's a nearly 100-year-old company founded by Sir Harry Ricciardo in the 1915. He was an engineer who was focusing on combustion development, and we're now a global organization. I'm based in Detroit, but I moved over from the UK a number of years ago. So just a bit of a quick history of Ricciardo, really. We've been at the forefront of combustion development for nearly 100 years. Sir Harry Ricciardo came to fame during the First World War, really. He was contracted by the Allied forces to develop a smokeless tank to give them a competitive advantage in France during the First World War. So when they started up their tanks, he didn't see a whole plume of exhaust smoke. So this initial combustion development attracted the attention of a couple of visionaries in Detroit who were very interested in his combustion development. So after a long-distance correspondence for a number of years by mail, Sir Harry eventually set sail to come to Detroit in the mid-20s to meet with these visionaries. These two particular visionaries, one actually still has a car company named after him, and the other one now has an automotive university named after him in Flint, were concerned about the stranglehold that Standard Chartered Oil Company had on fuel in the US and what impact that would have on the American rural industry. So, you know, even back 80, 90 years ago, there was a concern over, you know, the US rural industry and how that the fuel industry could impact that. So from the discussions Sir Harry had with Henry Ford and Charles Kettering, they came up with a new fuel, and it was painted as Ricciardo Discol. And this was an alcohol-based fuel. It was called RD1. It was manufactured in Cleveland. And that was the first steps towards a sort of a renewable fuel. And this led then, there was obviously a lot of consternation at the time about octane. And some of this work led to some fundamental research that Sir Harry did in the early 30s, which was the forerunner of the octane standard that we know today. So I'm quite proud to be standing here 80 years later and talking about the octane benefits and how that can impact the US. So as I said, it's been talked about by a number of people over the last day or so. There is some big challenges for the auto industry coming up. You know, President Obama last June rolled out these new fuel economy regulations, which basically takes the fleet average to 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025. And just to put that into context, in 2010, the fleet average was 27.3 miles per gallon. So it's doubling the fuel economy, or is the plan over the next 15 years. That will be a particular challenge for the autos, and there is no one single technology that will get them. They will have to integrate technologies through the vehicle, powertrain, all sorts of things to get to these numbers. And it is a stiff challenge, but you know, the autos are up for this, I believe, and they have no choice. I mean, it's going to be mandated, and there's significant penalties if they don't. If that wasn't hard enough, California have... The US already has the cleanest exhaust emissions in the world for passenger cars. California decided that wasn't clean enough, and they're going to reduce those emissions from 2016 by two-thirds. So we're currently, you know, very clean emissions for LEV 2, and they've introduced LEV 3, which would be introduced in 2016, and by 2022, all new vehicles will need to meet these standards. And this will have a significant impact on the engine technologies going forward. And I guess you guys also out there as the newer fuel standard. I don't want to cause a lot of consternation, but I personally don't agree with the renewable fuel standard or the timing of it, let me just clear that. I think the renewable fuels industry is now at a watershed point for growth. And they are, I think personally, from you know, the work I've done, there is an opportunity here to make an alliance with another great US industry, the auto industry, because they have challenges coming up. And for 2017, And I think one of the opportunities, as I'll discuss later, is, as Bob mentioned, is improving octane. But these guys don't want to optimise engines for a higher octane if the fuel's not there. So, you know, if I was king for the day, you'd be getting the 36 billion gallons by 2017 would be the target. I mean, that would be the challenge to everyone. How do you accelerate this by 5 years? I know it's contrary to what Dr. Meyer wants to slow it down, but I think there's a, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity for the renewable fuels industry to grow and to have a very strong partnership going forward with the auto. So, you know, personally, we need to accelerate this. I know it takes a lot of investment, and Jim Imler mentioned about, you know, concrete and steel, but I think there's never, ever been a better time for the renewable fuels industry than now, because the future looks very rosy based upon some of the challenges that are being given to the autos. So, you know, we talk about a lot of technology. There's no, and the bottom chart here is a survey of powertrain executives from global autos. And basically everyone's saying, although there's new technology becoming along, the predominant solution for 2025 will be a spark-ignited engine, no doubt about that. And that will require a liquid fuel. And so, you know, there's some huge opportunities to optimise this technology going forward. You know, there will be some diesel penetration, but with the CARB regulations being introduced, the after-treatment will be very, very expensive. Hybrids, there will be some, obviously, hybrid penetration. Electric vehicles, everyone's most concerned about range anxiety. And then CNG, there's obviously a little bit of that. And then fuel cells are still quite a way away. But so, you know, predominantly spark-ignited engines based with a gasoline or gasoline-based high-octane fuel are the way forward. And so within Ricardo, we have to focus on technologies, and we develop roadmaps for different technologies for engines, transmissions, vehicles, of what we think, you know, the future strategy is to meet these targets. And one of the key technologies we think going forward will be downsized boosted engines. So that will be taking an engine which has got a turbocharger and direct injection, and it's much smaller than the current naturally aspirated engine, and it operates at a much more efficient point, and, you know, fuel economy is much improved. So that's one of the key technologies. It's not the only technology, but from a base engine architecture, that's what we think going forward. And we see that from a number of companies. You know, Ford and GM obviously, you know, have their very, very state-of-the-art turbocharged engines. A lot of Europeans do. I'm sure Chrysler are working on a similar program. And so it's obvious that people are going that way. The only people that seems to be behind that is the Japanese. They seem to be focusing on hybrids at the moment and not sort of a turbocharging route. But it is very predominant by the Europeans and the American car companies as a direction they're going. And so, you know, what are the pathways for spark-ignited development? So currently, you know, a lot of PFI, which is injecting the fuel into the port and then into the combustion chamber, you know, and then the people at current production technology is port fuel boosted, and as I mentioned, direct injection boosted is now, and as GM have an engine, a significant engine, Ford have bet their whole farm, no pun intended, on EcoBoost. I mean, now it's not just a V6 engine, it's a range of engines from 1 litre up to V6. So, and then there's DI naturally aspirated. Again, GM have a very, very prominent DI engine in their 3.6. And then, you know, there's an Atkinson cycle engine, which is late intake valve closing, which is used in the Ford Escape in their hybrid. And there's other technologies that are being developed which will further improve fuel economy, adding of dilutants into the combustion chamber to further improve fuel economy. And then further out, there's more wacky things like a two-stroke, four-stroke engine. So, you know, there's a lot of focus on spark-ignited engine technology for the US, and I think it's very prominent. So just interesting, just to mention what octane is. Octane is the standard measure of the anti-knock property of a fuel. Currently, you guys probably all know 87. The higher the octane, the higher the compression ratio of an engine is possible. And if you increase the compression ratio of an engine, you can increase the fuel economy. And so you guys actually produce a very high octane fuel, which is somewhere around 110 RON. And based upon sort of generic research by many autos, if you increase the compression ratio of an engine by a unit of one, so go from 10 to 1 to 11 to 1, there's somewhere between a 3 to 5% fuel economy benefit. So there's some significant fuel economy benefits if you can increase the compression ratio. But to increase the compression ratio, you ideally need a higher octane fuel. And so there's a opportunity here for that development. So as I mentioned, downsize boosting will be a key strategy going forward. GM already had a product. Ford have had a product. You know, many products from Europe already, Audi, BMW, etc. And so boosting an engine is using a turbocharger to put more air into the engine, get a more efficient use of the air. And also direct injection is to inject the fuel directly into the combustion chamber. From that, you get a significant cooling effect, which means you can run the engine warmer. So what does that do if you have a downsized boosted engine? So basically, as an example, really, and something went wrong with the PDF, but I apologize for that. But basically, a mid-sized vehicle today has a 3-litre V6 engine, naturally aspirated. In the future, that a Chevy Malibu or something similar will have a 1.4-litre turbo engine, which is getting the same performance but better fuel economy. And interestingly enough, you know, the iconic pickup, the F-150, their best-selling engine now has a V6 turbocharged engine. By the sales is, I think it's something like 65 to 35 against the V8 engine. And just because you get better fuel economy and better performance from the smaller engine. And so people are obviously driven to buy that. And so that's a technology. So we see the trend as going forward. And then, you know, it's hard to put a crystal ball of what the future will look like. But in 2025, a pickup truck might have a highly boosted four-cylinder engine. I mean, that's what people are going to, which will be using much more efficient use of the engine. So typically, although an internal combustion engine is very cost-effective, it's relatively inefficient as well. 25% of the fuel that goes into a naturally aspirated engine is actually converted to work that goes to the wheels. The rest is dissipated as heat or exhaust gases. On a turbocharged engine, you can get to mid to high 30s, which is an order of magnitude better in terms of using the fuel to get actual work. So that's the direction people are going. And here's just a number of manufacturers I mentioned. A lot of people have turbocharged engines. I've missed a few off here, but Audi, obviously. You know, GM and Ford are pretty prominent in the US with their turbocharged engines. I mean, the GM 2-litre engine is a very, very good engine. It's used in many products now. It's now actually replacing some of the naturally aspirated V6 capacity. So their 2-litre engine is a very high-volume engine. Ford, obviously, as I mentioned, they have a V6 engine. And they've recently launched their 1-litre EcoBoost engine in Europe. I think it's a 3-cylinder. And then many of the other companies sell turbocharged engines in the US. So it's a trend that we're seeing increasing. And it's, just like diesel are now all turbocharged engines, by 2025, the majority of, gasoline engines or, liquid fuel engines will be turbocharged, I believe. And just as well as, someone mentioned this about CO2 as well. Ricardo did quite a bit of study on, what is the optimal, or this isn't actually the optimal, we did a study on what was the different effect on ethanol on CO2. And one of the key things for us, this is comparing a full-size pickup truck. So the bottom is a baseline gasoline. The line above it, the bars above it, are the baseline diesel in that pickup truck. And then it's running our optimized V6 on regular gas, E85 and E40. And one of the opportunities we saw was somewhere between the blend between E35 to E45, there's some significant CO2 benefit. So on this graph, the shorter the bars, the better. I mean, we're getting much better CO2 emissions than any of the other applications on our E40 blend. So it's optimizing that octane. So really, to conclude, the US auto industry has some huge challenges ahead of it. And although there will be some vehicle electrification, most of the vehicles will be powered by a gasoline-based fuel engine. And I think, there's a huge opportunity here to introduce a higher octane fuel in the US, with this technology that's being introduced with direct injection, turbocharging, and higher compressions, has a natural thirst for a higher octane. So I think, the winds of change are here. If the ethanol industry was ever at a point of, growth, huge growth, I mean, the day is here now. The time is now. The government, inadvertently, through their 2017 to 2025 rollout, have provided this industry with a massive opportunity for growth. And that's why I strongly believe, you know, we need to change the playbook for RFS2. You need to accelerate that if possible, because there's no point having an alliance with the autos and then failing to deliver the fuel, because the autos will be left with nothing. And then that's the challenge here. Somehow the autos and the ethanol or the renewable fuel industry needs to be aligned to have a common goal. And I think there's a mechanism for this to happen. And with that, that's it. Thank you very much.